Studio 360.
These days, it's really not enough anymore for kids who want to get into a good college to just get good grades and good test scores. Everybody is rushing to participate in after-school programs and summer programs and science camps and to be fencers and to do volunteer work building homes in Tanzania just to show college admissions people how focused and passionate and ambitious they are. Of course, some high school kids are authentically motivated in those ways, and some have greatness thrust upon them, such as Aparna Nancherla, who was in high school in the late 90s, way before she became a comedian. She told her story of entering a high school science competition at a live event I hosted with our friends from the Story Collider. The Story Collider is a great event series and podcast where people, scientists as well as non-scientists, tell stories involving science that are both entertaining and true. Here's Aparna.
I've never told this story before, so I'm just gonna, here it goes. I'm glad I did it, partly because it was worth it, but mostly because I never have to do it again. Thus spoke Mark Twain, and his words can apply to a lot of things in life. He could be talking about bungee jumping, paper mache, going off of heroin, like many things fall under that umbrella. In my case, it applies to high school, and I don't think I'm alone in that. Yeah. A lot of people have a tough time in high school, and I feel like the few people who cruise through, like they're looked at askance later in life as if to say, oh, so that's too bad, you peaked so young. Yeah, I feel like Malcolm Gladwell wrote a whole book about it. So anyway, just to give you a little background, I grew up in Northern Virginia, and at the end of eighth grade, basically, I had gone to private school for the past 4 years, and it was like a fancy private school, uniforms, Christmas play, the works, and I was all set to go to high school, same school. I had my, you know, carefully cultivated social circle. I was ready for a lax dress code. I was ready to go, but there was one little catch. In my county, there was this very fancy public magnet school that specialized in science and technology, and you had to take a test to get in. And I had no interest in taking the test, but my parents are both first-generation immigrants from India and doctors to boot, and it's not a stereotype if I say it, so don't even think it. But they were like, just take the test, you know, like you don't have to go, just take it to prove you got the stuff. And then if you get in, then you can decide if you actually want to go. So basically they were like, you can burn that bridge when you come to it, but just take the test. So I took it because, you know, nothing motivates a teenager more than to commit to something after boldly pronouncing something like, fine, I'll do it. So I was like, fine, I'll take this test. You want me to take this test? I'll take it. And the weird thing is I got into the school like with no, like I didn't want to get in, but, you know, I was a good student. I will admit that, but not for the right reasons. Like I wasn't passionate about school, but it was more just like something to do. So that's why I was a good student. I don't know what that says about me, but I do remember on the test, like the essay question was just, do you think computers will ever become obsolete? And I remember it was the first time I answered an essay question by creating like the shakiest thesis of all time and just like meandering around an answer and articulating nothing of actual substance, which I feel like is a very valuable skill as an adult. Like we're huge fans of that. This was really a breakthrough in that way. But also, this was the 90s, so was, you know, the iPhone was just a twinkle in Steve Jobs' eyes. None of us knew. And when I got in, my parents, of course, changed the game again. And they were like, well, you got in, you know? Just go for a year and then see how you feel. I did that little parent twist. So like many, you know, second immigrant children before and after me, I was just like gently but firmly pushed towards my bright STEM future. And just a note about the school, like there was a very, you know, hard curriculum. Like a lot of the classes were already like set for you all your 4 years, especially in math, science, and technology. And while you could test out into like a higher level, for most kids, it was biology as a freshman, chemistry as a sophomore, physics as a junior, and then the coveted geoscience as a senior, paired with like an intensive lab that you also had to pick. And I only bring this up just to give you an idea of like how academically rigorous this school was. Like, it was basically like there were a lot of eggheads at my school, and I don't mean that in a pejorative sense. Like, I mean, there were like some really smart kids. Like, some of them didn't have the social skills to like remember to wear two shoes every day. But they had like the ability to create a robot that would do it for them. Like, they were very advanced. And the point is, like, a lot of kids, they knew what they were doing there. They belonged there for a reason. I didn't really feel like I knew how I fit in. And so one of the first big assignments as a freshman for biology class was that you had to enter a project in the science fair as a group. Like, the science fair was optional the rest of your high school career, but as a freshman, it was mandatory. And they put together groups, like most school projects, by random chance. And my group was a very hodgepodge, mishmash. Like, I would say there was one girl who was very popular in my group. Let's call her Kelly. And then there was a very responsible achiever girl. Let's call her Michelle. Oh, wait. I guess that makes me Beyonce. That's weird. But yeah, that's weird, but I feel like it fits, you know, I think that actually it works out well. Cause even then I did consider myself an outlier of sorts, you know, like it's like a rogue star that people weren't ready for yet. So the topic we chose, which you've heard about a little tonight already, was environmental science. And this was not a time yet in which like climate change was like hashtag trending. Like, this was an earlier time in environmental science. Like, you know, acid rain had been a hot button issue for a while. People tried to save whales and the rainforest and whales again. Like, you know, peace frogs were on shirts, but it wasn't as motivated as it is now, but we were like, you know, the earth matters. So we picked, basically for our project, me and Michelle picked the project, and then Kelly worked on being popular, which is a full-time job. And what we did for the project was we specifically looked at how aluminum nitrate, which is a chemical compound that's found in like fertilizer and a lot of chemical runoff, like how it affects populations of organisms in water. And the organisms we chose to go with were Paramecia for our experiment. If you're not familiar with Paramecia, they're a one-celled organism, similar to amoeba in that they're completely dispensable and considered free range for any type of scientific experimentation. So our project was pretty straightforward. Basically, we had these solutions of paramecium in water, and then every day we would add a little bit more aluminum nitrate and see how the populations were affected. And you're like, oh, how did you get paramecia? That's a great question. Like most one-celled organisms, we got them from a biology catalog order, or you could also get them on Tinder, I guess, now. Another popular place. But the one little sort of hiccup in the research was that there was like a holiday break in the middle of like our experiment. So basically one of us had to take the data home and do the project from home. And we were like, Kelly, you haven't really carried your weight until now. So maybe you take it to your house. And you know, Kelly's game, she in her favor, she did agree to do it. But then the paramecia never actually made it to Kelly's house because she left them outside during tennis practice. And I'm sad to say they all perished in the cruel sun. And I would imagine the last conversation among them was something like, Phil, I thought the aluminum nitrate levels were bad, but this heat is oppressive. And then the other one's like, yeah, Pablo, and to add insult to injury, I hate tennis. I tried to add some diversity in my paramecia casting. So, you know, we reached a real impasse with our project. Our girl group had to have an emergency meeting, and there was not enough time at this point to start our project over again. The science fair was coming up too soon, and, you know, we couldn't forfeit this early in our high school careers that would gaff this big. So, you know, like, with the intensity of, like, a gathering of witches under the full moon, we were like, we can't tell anyone about this. So we were like, we're just going to use our earlier data and then extrapolate the rest. You know, because that's a thing you can do. And, you know, it's like, I know it was wrong. Like, we all knew it was empirically wrong. But it's like, what choice did we have? Like, if anything, we were kind of operating on the plus side of plus or minus scientific error. But you need that half. And for some reason, we completely excused Kelly from any accountability. We were just like, yeah, it's very hard to maintain your position as a cheerleader. She was a cheerleader. You couldn't have known. So even though we didn't want to work together before, now we were bonded together in this, like, sick, low-stakes version of I Know What You Did Last Summer, starring Paramecia. And you know, we swore secrecy among the three of us, and I hope the statute of limitations is up on that, because here I am talking about it pretty openly. But it's like, isn't that the last step of the scientific method anyway? It's like, finish your experiment by all means necessary. I feel like that is a step that you don't talk about. The truly twisted part to me was that we took our Paramecia back to the lab, and then I kept adding aluminum nitrate every day, like a true psychopath, mad scientist, like, everything's going great. I was like, here I am, where's my Nobel? But so then fate had a really weird twist in store, which was that, so then we took our project to the school science fair, and, you know, there were prizes in every category, and I don't know how this happened. Some way, somehow, we created a great cover story, I guess, because we got third place in our, I know, that's really a testament to us, I think. That's really what that is. And now it was like the stakes were even higher. Like, we had to go to another level of science fair. And I was like, well, now there's really no way we can come clean, because a scandal this big could unravel the scientific community as we know it. The only honorable thing to do is to go to the regionals, lie through our teeth, boldly misrepresent ourselves confidently, as the American way. And of course, that's what we did. We went there. We told our story again. No one was impressed at regionals. We were like, thank God we can just slink out of this and never talk about it again. I mean, we had like the blood of two orders of Paramecia on our hands. Like, don't think we weren't up at night being like, I hope they're happy wherever they are. And so I guess, you know, I've thought about this story often because it's not something I'm proud of. But I was trying to think, you know, what lessons can you cull here? And I think one of them is definitely, like, at the end of the day, pick a career where you can spin your lack of integrity into, like, a cheeky life lesson. That's a fun one. You know, it's like, what we did was very wrong, but I almost feel like because it was a group effort, it diluted our individual wrongness, which interestingly enough is a principle in psychology, which I later majored in and did a thesis in, and did not kill any experimental or control groups, because my subjects were humans, so that would be more serious. But you know, you can cheat alone, but if you do it with other people, there's kind of a circle of trust where you're just like, we're in this together. And, you know, if you have perfectionistic tendencies, it's kind of like you feel like a fraud all the time anyway. So to actually be one felt in some ways liberating. I was like, this is what I've been talking about. And in the end, I feel like science, despite its emphasis on, like, hard data and irrefutable proofs, is as subject to the fickleness of human nature as anything else. But I feel like if you asked our Paramecia, they'd just be like, go to hell. Thank you.
That's the comedian Aparna Nancherla. She was one of the four excellent storytellers at our event with the Story Collider.